When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hitting the car industry cold turkey with this stuff overnight is going to just skyrocket prices and hurt the consumer. Hello and welcome back to a special IRL edition of the Plugged In podcast. I'm Patrick George, editor-in-chief of Inside EVs.
And I'm Tim Levin, senior reporter at Inside EVs. On this week's episode, tariffs are here and nobody's happy about it. Q1 EV sales numbers are trickling in and the big loser is Tesla. And people love Toyota's hybrids, but they can't find any to buy. But first, Patrick, we're actually here, actually doing this in person. How cool is that?
It's amazing. It's weird. And honestly, like, not great for productivity, because I'm not going to lie to you, man. When we're doing the podcast, most of the time, I'm answering emails and stuff. I like multitasking. What can I say?
Hopefully, people don't notice. I didn't notice that. Hopefully, the listeners don't notice that.
Yeah, one host. So, yeah, you're in town because you're from New York City originally, and you're visiting family. And also, I got us tickets to Othello. I blew the entire year's T&E on it, just those tickets. But you know what? Worth it.
Are those my plans tonight?
Yeah, let's do it, man. It'd be great. You know, some of the best, like, $50,000 I ever spent of company money.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
But you came in from upstate, and we have to talk about what you're driving this week, as usual.
Because I think we should talk about some fun car stuff before we get into a lengthy diatribe about tariffs. But no, this past week, I was in the Audi SQ6 e-tron, and I'm sad because it's gone now, and I had to give it back, and I end up liking that EV a lot more than I thought I would. That's the new super advanced PPE platform from the Volkswagen group. And it's, you know, that's been delayed a bunch because of software issues and battery problems and all kinds of headaches that they had to deal with. But the thing is great. And it feels like a quantum leap over a lot of Volkswagen group EVs I've driven. Like, the software is amazing. It has like a virtual voice assistant and like a heads up display that has like holograms that show the directions you need to go in. And it's got, you know, smartphone as a key. Like, they really kind of threw the kitchen sink at this thing. And it was fast too. 510 horsepower, supposedly 275 miles of range. I never got close to that in upstate cold, but I really like this thing a lot. I wish it wasn't $85,000 because I'd want one. You drove one a few months ago, right? You liked that thing too, didn't
you? That was my takeaway too. It was like, really good effort from Audi, really good new luxury EV. But like, the price of it is like a solid, I don't remember, 10, 15, 20 grand more than like the gas equivalent, the Q5.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's a hard sell. But I also really liked it. Like, the user interface, the software was really nice. One of the like cute things about it, usually, like, so you go to these drive events for a peek behind the curtain, like, you go to these drive events, they like tell you, they give you like presentations about the car that you're driving. And like, most of it is like, Not super useful. You go drive the car and you figure out what you think of it. But they were like, here's the thing. It'll understand if you mispronounce the word Audi. If the voice assistant is like,
half of the Americans can't pronounce Audi right ever.
Yeah, exactly. So it's programmed to understand you if you say Audi.
Audi. Yeah.
To be honest, I've actually never heard anybody say, but I guess people do.
Yeah. It's not that hard, but I gave that back, and now I'm in a Volvo XC90 plug-in hybrid. And I'm really pro hybrids for other people. Like, I don't personally care for them because I'm kind of just over driving gas cars, and even an electrified lawnmower still feels like a lawnmower to me. But it's a super nice car, and it's been powerful and fast. I've been plugging it at home, and super nice. That's a fun one, like the XC90. It's like they had this big plan to make the EX90, the all-electric one. Like, that's the new flagship SUV. And then, like every other car company, their electric sales didn't take off as fast as they wanted. So it's like, oh, crap. Like, take the XC90, let's update it, put the new stuff on, the new software. But it's good. And it's all Google-powered. Like, Volvo and Polestar are really good at that. It's that Google infotainment system. It's built in. And it'll answer all of your questions. Like, it'll literally Google stuff on the spot and tell you. And, like, honestly, like, the cars, like all cars, it's so damn complicated. I didn't know how to do stuff. I'm driving home last night. I'm like, hey, how do I turn on the automatic high beams on a Volvo XC90? It's like, oh, well, according to this website,
really,
twist this ring on the side. I was like, thanks, car. Thanks, Google.
I will say that I agree. That's a great new feature. And you can do that in GM cars, too, because they also have the Google built in. It's hilarious that it doesn't just, like, go look in the car's, like, manual.
Like, why do you have to Google it? Once you know, you're the car.
Right.
Yeah. It's, but that's good.
Yeah. I'll tell you what's not good, Tim, or at least is highly controversial, is tariffs, baby, which we recorded this late on a Wednesday afternoon because there was a lot of speculation as to whether or not President Trump would actually make good on his threats of 25% tariffs on imported cars. And lo and behold, the president has done that. So
Patrick, are you feeling liberated yet?
Am I feeling liberated? Well, yeah, I live in the United States of America, brother. I'm always liberated. I'm always free, but especially more today on Liberation Day.
So for some background, on Wednesday today, as we're recording, Trump on the White House lawn announced a bunch of new tariffs that the U.S. is implementing, announced a bunch of reciprocal tariffs on our trading partners, and that's on top of the already huge 25% tariffs on imported cars and parts that he announced last week. Those go into effect on April 3rd. I think every outlet under the sun has covered the impacts of this. It's going to be devastating for the auto industry in a whole lot of ways. I think we should focus on, what does this mean for electrification? What does this mean for the future of the auto industry and all the stuff that we talk about?
Yeah.
So, like, what are your kind of initial thoughts there?
Yeah. So if you go that route, I think of this two ways. There's the industry side, right? And I think that these tariffs come at the worst possible time for these car companies.
Yeah.
And we say this a lot. Like, it's not our job to care if car companies are profitable or not. Like, we just write about what happens. And although there's obviously, like, a broader macroeconomic importance to these companies and them being successful. But, you know, this is an industry that's trying to invest in electrification at a rapid rate and autonomy and software.
Yeah.
And deal with competitors from China all at once. And, like, they're already struggling to do that. Like, they are, a lot of them are somewhere between, like, staying above water to, like, getting their asses kicked doing this. And now they have tariffs on top of that. And potentially the need to build more factories in America right away, like, ASAP. And, like, where will the money for that come from? By the way, I want to talk about this later. A lot of what they're proposing, I don't disagree with.
Yeah.
But it's a question of timing, right?
I think maybe we take that first, like, the industry side. Totally agree. Like, this is, like, what people need to know about the auto industry is this is not a high margin business.
Yeah.
This is not Silicon Valley type stuff where, like, you just have, like, so much excess profits that you'll invest it in moonshot projects like Google does.
Yeah.
We're talking about General Motors and Ford, companies that make, like, single digit maybe margins.
Yeah.
And they're trying to...
You're lucky if it's like 6% profit margins on each car sold.
They're trying to move all these different directions. This requires tons of investment in new electric vehicle platforms, new autonomous systems, software, like, all this stuff they've never done. And now on top of that, like, your already tiny margins are about to be crushed by these tariffs.
Yeah.
And like we're about to talk about, like, the one thing you can do is you raise prices to accommodate for that. And then we get to, like, the second part of it, which is that this is really bad for consumers, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, objectively, this will make cars more expensive at a time when cars are more expensive than they've ever been. They've been really climbing since the pandemic happened. So, you know, a lot of places and outlets that have been critical of the president have called it the biggest tax hike in American history, just because of the costs going to be passed on to the consumer. And you have some numbers on how expensive new cars are, right?
Yeah. So, like, I mean, I think that the thing to underscore here is that when you talk about electrification and the movement toward EVs, there's a few big problems. There's, like, people complain about charging infrastructure. People complain about range. These are things that worry them and make them not necessarily want to jump into an EV. And one of the biggest, if not the biggest factor keeping people out of EVs is just the price. It's the fact that right now, as all these companies ramp up these investments and they, you know, are scaling things up, EVs are more expensive than gas cars. So in February, and this includes things like incentives and discounts that dealerships and automakers are piling on, the average transaction price for an EV was over $55,000 compared to the average for the industry as a whole in America at $48,000.
That's insane that that's with discounts and incentives. Yeah. That is so much money.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, like, this disparity, I mean, maybe it won't get worse because everything is going to get more expensive, but, like, you're talking about, instead of an average EV costing $55,000, maybe it goes up to $60,000, $65,000. And that just, like, puts that just, you know, it just delays the onset of, like, the real mainstreamification of EVs.
Yeah.
If they stay expensive.
They stay expensive. Yeah. Yeah. Cause that was the point. Like, build out your scale, build out your battery factories, get the cost down, get the battery cost down, et cetera. And it's like, this throws a wrench into all of that.
Yeah.
And you might be saying, oh, just buy American then, right? Just buy American. But, like, this is more complicated than people realize. Like, Chevy Equinox EV is a top seller, made in Mexico. Honda Prologue, made in Mexico. Ford Mustang Mach-E, which was or is generally, like, the top-selling non-Tesla EV in America, made in Mexico also. And also, just very quickly on Tesla, like, always tops the charts of, like, the most American-made cars, period, in this country. Electric or otherwise, but, like, even Elon Musk has said, look, we source foreign parts like everybody does. Like, this will be a significant hit to us too. One estimate we got today from the Anderson Economic Group, which is a big consulting firm, they said that the cost to make a Ford Mustang Mach-E could go up by $15,000 because of the tariffs. And we don't know what the cost to the consumer is, but I don't think Ford CEO Jim Farley is just going to, like, let that slide. And be like, you know what? We got this, folks. We're going to eat the cost of that on every single one.
Yeah. And a Mustang Mach-E currently costs $36,500. They recently...
You could find one for that cheap.
Yeah. MSRP, $36,500. So you're talking about $50,000 now if they pass on all those costs, which is a lot.
Yeah. You know, one thing I thought of just now, too, you know, who could be the winner here, honestly, is, like, BYD or one of the Chinese automakers. Because I've always thought that, like, tariffs and geopolitical tensions keep the Chinese automakers out of our country for now. But I always thought, like, if China or one of those companies came to President Trump and struck some deal with him, like, you know, we'll let BYD in. And if BYD builds in Michigan or Tennessee or Ohio, they probably go for it. And, like, that's American jobs, too, right? But as all these automakers are struggling with technology and electrification and batteries, BYD comes in and is like, oh, homie, we got this. Like, we've done this already. Like, we can, you're struggling to do this. Like, we've done it and we can do it here cheaper because we know what we're doing. Like, that's a real avenue for, like, them to come in and win when everybody else is like,
it's possible.
Yeah. Slammed.
Yeah. So who do you think gets hit the hardest here? These tariffs are coming for everybody. They're not going to hit everybody in the same way.
Yeah.
Who do you think is most at risk?
There are levels of bad here. That's truly really interesting. It's like, okay, you think this would favor the American car companies like Ford, GM, the US components of Stellantis, but they make so many cars in Mexico and Canada that they're getting hammered here. Toyota, Honda, they have gigantic manufacturing presences in this country already. Like, there are entire towns that exist in Ohio because of Honda.
Yeah.
And I sometimes wonder if the president knows that. He knows how many, like, cars from the so-called foreign automakers are actually made here. But then you have the ones that don't really have a U.S. presence at all or would take years to get there. Audi does not make any cars in the United States. It never has. Polestar doesn't either. Volkswagen is very heavily dependent on Germany. It's heavily dependent on Mexico. Like, it has a factory in Tennessee, but that's it. Like, those are the big losers in my mind. Like, Nissan is very dependent on production in Mexico, and Nissan's really not doing very well financially right now. I have one winner in mind for this whole thing, like, relatively speaking, we can go into at the end, but like, it's just like these smaller players that don't have a way to manufacture cars in America are really going to get hurt. And like, they don't make any EVs right now. But Mazda is a great example of that. Like, Mazda makes like one car with at a Toyota plant, Alabama, and the rest are imported from Japan. And like, they're going to get, pretty nailed here, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at a list here of the automakers and how much of their U.S. sales are imported. So this is from S&P Global. Geely/Volvo imports about 90% of their U.S. sales.
Volvo has a factory in South Carolina, too.
So they're going to hit really hard.
Yeah.
Mazda, as you said, 80% of their U.S. sales are imported. Volkswagen, 80% of their sales are imported. BMW is over 50% of their sales are imported. But then again, this also shows you that a lot of these companies are making a ton of cars in America already.
They are. Yeah. A lot of them are doing what the president says they should be doing, what he wants them to be doing. Like,
yeah.
And here's the thing is that I actually don't disagree with a lot of what President Trump said in the Rose Garden tonight. Like, really seriously, when you're talking about how many manufacturing jobs across all industries have been offshored and outsourced for decades and what that's done to this country. And I think, you know, 30 years after, I think we are seeing the damage that like NAFTA had.
Mm-hmm.
And who has it helped, right? It's like, objectively, I think it's helped like the very wealthy get wealthier. And, you know, like I'm from Texas originally, like my family's all from Pennsylvania, and I live near the Pennsylvania border now. Like that's a state, you know, that has been just eviscerated by losing its steel industry, right? Just to give you one example of many, like, we don't really make steel in this country at all anymore. And so, like, I do believe in the idea of American manufacturing and American jobs. I just think that, like, hitting the car industry cold turkey with this stuff overnight is going to just skyrocket prices and hurt the consumer. And I think what Trump would have done that, honestly, I would have been behind would have been like, all right, the X percentage of tariffs go into effect in 2028, and they go up from there, govern yourselves accordingly. You got 3 years to make a car factory or more car factories in America. And if you can't, well, you know, thanks for playing and best of luck. And like, that would have been a more of a long-term thing almost. Almost like Biden was doing with the IRA, right? Like, all the incentives around EVs and stuff, that was developing long-term manufacturing here.
Right.
But just tariffs overnight, I don't know if, I think that's just going to do more harm than good, you know?
I agree. It is taking a sledgehammer or like a nuclear weapon, you know, to a problem that requires
finesse. Yeah.
I think it's really rare. I think it shows something that pretty much everybody agrees that this is a terrible idea. Like the Cato Institute, you know, libertarian, like the libertarians, Republicans, Democrats,
there's that predator meme where they're like high-fiving like that. Yeah. It's like all these diverse groups, like libertarians and like unions are like, this sucks.
Actually, this is the one group that I can tell that likes this is the UAW.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. It's a very odd turn for UAW President Sean Fain, who has been really antagonistic towards Trump, but sees this as a boon for American workers. And I mean, like, if all goes right, like long term, it could be. But I just think that, like, the hold your breath in the meantime, right?
Yeah,
you know.
I just think. Other than them, I haven't found anybody who's like, hooray, these tariffs. From the New York Times editorial page to the Wall Street Journal editorial page, everybody's like, this is insanely dumb on every level.
Yeah. No, it is always hilarious when like those two editorial pages are somehow in lockstep with each other. Yeah. No, it's like, I also don't think a lot of Americans get how this works still. Like, when I was at the Hyundai plant last week, we were talking to a guy who's not involved with the company. We were just talking to him. And he was like, you know, these tariffs coming in. So, you know, the foreign countries have to pay that, right? And we were just like, no, like, it's going to get passed on to the consumer. And he's like, oh, well, you know, I own Ford. I want to buy another Ford. So I'm okay. I was like, where's your Ford? And he, Mexico. I was like, yeah, no, like, you're going to pay more for this. And he was just like, oh, okay. So it's not just like us sticking some fee on South Korea, you know, no. because we've been wrong. It's a cost to the consumer. And I don't know. We'll see what happens. But it is going to be hard to cover the EV space as business as usual, because so much of this is, like you said, like future development, future technology development. And after today, man, like, all bets are off.
Yeah. And I think the one thing that we didn't really mention that I'll underscore before we move on to our next story, because I think we've lost half the audience with this much tariff talk.
Yeah, probably.
But
sorry, everyone.
You know,
we didn't ask for this. Let me tell you that.
Yeah. Last year, you saw this kind of cascade of announcements last year, maybe part of the year before. Automakers have been seeing that EV demand, EV uptake isn't growing as quickly as they had expected.
Right.
They're pulling back investments. They're pushing out new models and factories and stuff. And you might see a real continuation of that this year in the next couple of years if they realize that these costs of the tariffs, lower revenues, lower demand for these more expensive cars, that could really hit them hard.
I think a good example of this is the Kia EV3, which I drove last year in South Korea. It's like a smaller crossover, kind of boxy shaped. I love this thing. I mean, there's a lot that was more advanced even than my EV6 on it. And they were targeting like 30-35K for it when it comes to America. It's like, okay, where are you going to build it now? At what price now? Like, who the heck knows? Like, could that car still be $35,000 if it's made in Mexico now? Could you still charge that much if it's made in America now? Would they have to sell it at a loss? Are they just going to scrap it entirely? I don't know. You know, like, I'm not sure anybody knows the answer. And what's wacky too, and then we'll shut up about this, I promise. The car industry's been really quiet about this whole thing. Like, I think they've been trying to back channel a lot of stuff with the White House, but like, you don't hear them like out just like mobilizing people and mobilizing their congressmen and talking about what the definitive price increases are going to be. It's like, I think they almost kind of want you to just show up at your Volkswagen dealer and shut up and deal with it. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, we're going to be keeping an eye on this news and all the earnings calls coming up soon. I'm sure we're going to hear all these auto executives at this point, bedwetting. Or whatever the word is. Not bedwetting, because it's actually a really big problem. We're going to hear them talking about how big an impact this is, and we'll let you guys know.
It's the sadness time for sure.
Yeah. I think let's move on.
Thank God.
Most people don't know how many financial accounts they have or their net worth. And when you're not paying attention, you're leaving money on the table. The solution is Monarch, an all-in-one personal finance tool that brings your entire financial life together in one clean interface on your laptop or phone. In just minutes, link all your accounts for a complete picture of your financial health. You'll never need a spreadsheet again. Get 50% off your first year, that's just $50 total, at monarch.com with code BUDGET. That's monarch.com, promo code BUDGET.
EV sales numbers for the first quarter are trickling in, and things are looking pretty good for many companies.
Yeah, everybody thought that 2025 was going to be this death knell year for EVs, that demand would drop off, that the policies from the new White House that were reversing a lot of the investments from the Biden years that would drive demand. But it's not. It's like, we had a great quarter of electric sales. And I could take you through some numbers if you want, Tim Levin.
Yeah. Who stuck out to you as the kind of big winners in Q1? Because it was a mixed bag a little.
Yeah. It was interesting. It's a lot of the usual suspects that have done well so far are continuing their momentum. General Motors, EV sales up 94% in Q1. Hell yeah, GM. We love to see it, man. Go get them. They sold 32,000 EVs in Q1, but also sold 42,000 in Q4 of last year, although end of year is always a bonanza for car sales. Ford did really well. Electrified sales up 26%, 33% hybrids were up, 12% EVs. You know, Ford's doing well on hybrids too. Hyundai doing well. BMW up 26% year over year. So, BMW, like, kind of quietly really kicking ass at electric cars, and nobody really gives them credit for it. It says overall Q1 US EV sales estimate from Cox Auto is a 12% increase from last year. But it's also kind of down, despite all that, those rosy numbers I just threw you. What's not good, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the important thing is that the through line, like the general trend line, as it has been for years now, is that this industry is growing and sales are going up. And so,
yeah,
Cox Automotive, which is a big kind of auto industry data provider, is expecting a 12% increase in EV sales year over year for Q1, but a decline from Q4 of last year.
Which again, I actually do think makes sense, because it's like end of year is always, that's when people go buy new cars. That's sure. When, you know, yeah, Lexus December to remember. So that's when Toyota-thon is on. That's, you know, all the stuff. So this is a slower time to be buying. But it does seem like Tesla's dragging the sector down, which has happened before.
Yeah. So I wanted to quickly, before we get into Tesla, I wanted to quickly recap basically the broad strokes of what happened last year, which is that similarly, like everybody kind of was thinking that EV sales were going to drop really bad. It seemed like a terrible time because there were all these stories about various automakers pulling back their targets, about EV demand growth slowing. And yet we ended last year, the EV industry ended last year with a record 1.3 million EV sales in the US. And that was despite slower demand and a really poor showing from Tesla, which is the industry leader. Tesla's sales shrunk last year. Most other automakers had their EV sales grow a ton last year, and it balanced out for a record year. And it seems like we're kind of on track for a similar outcome, because in Q1 of this year, Tesla sales were down 13% year over year globally.
Globally, yeah. Tesla doesn't break out its sales by region, so we go off different estimates that we get from analysts and registrations. I won't bore you with all of the numbers, but in Europe specifically, not good, really not good. Like, pick a European country, and Tesla was down somewhere between 25% and like 60%. Norway, Portugal, Austria, Sweden, the Netherlands. The Europeans have really soured on Elon, and I think it's his involvement in far-right politics over there and him, like, you know, standing for like any AFD party in Germany, you know, like these countries that like cannot really live with a memory of World War II and aren't super keen to go back to, you know, like that kind of, like, you know, that level of rhetoric. So yeah, not good for this company. And when Tesla goes down, it tends to drag the entire sector with it, you know,
because Tesla still in the US makes up like about, you know, 50% of the market and shrinking, but like Tesla goes down a little bit and it tends to really skew the numbers for the whole market.
What's interesting, it does seem like more and more of these buyers are going from Tesla to other brands. So it's like the sector as a whole grows slowly, but like as Tesla drops, like GM, Hyundai, BMW, all these other ones, like they clean up basically. Yeah.
So just to recap the numbers here, Tesla delivered around 337,000 vehicles in Q1, which is a lot of cars, but it's also its worst result in nearly 3 years. And I think a lot of that has to do with the whole Elon Musk situation, the fact that like people around the world, and probably especially in America, are not too keen on Tesla right now. They're trading in their Teslas. They're not buying new ones. They're putting sassy bumper stickers on the back of them to say how they're embarrassed about it. So what do you think Tesla needs to do to turn this around? Because I think Elon Musk is one part of it, but there's a lot else.
I was talking about this with another journalist the other day, and we got this discussion about, like, can Tesla come back from this current moment? Like, let's be real. Like, whether you love this guy and his politics, and you love Doge, you love the cost cutting, you're like, you know, like get after him, or you hate what's happening right now, like it is really true that he has alienated that core base of kind of like liberal, progressive, center leaning buyers that were Tesla fans or people inclined to buy EVs. So how do they come back from that? Is it him leaving Doge? Is it him getting fired from the company? Is it him doing a mea culpa? Is it him just kind of getting the company back on track slowly, and it gets past this like rough patch? Like, on one hand, Americans have like a memory of about 5 minutes, just like we think 5 minutes into the future about everything. So like this could pass, maybe, or it might not, or maybe it's so big this time, maybe including his copious financial support of President Trump during the election, that a lot of like Tesla fans who don't like Trump aren't going to forget. Like, can they move past this moment? I don't know, man.
I don't know. It is It is unprecedented, and I think it shows why most big CEOs of global companies don't get into politics, even in a little bit. They, you know, things kind of behind closed doors. Can Tesla bounce back? I would like to think yes, because Tesla is a really innovative American company. Like, they've historically made great cars. They created this whole industry. It would be cool if you could buy them and it wasn't colored by all this controversy.
I think it can, but not with him as CEO.
Yeah.
I think if he left, or he went to go just focus on AI, or he got fired by the board or did whatever, and somebody new comes in and they really went full court press on the marketing communication side of things. Like, it's a new day at this company. We're doing things differently. Probably they'd have to focus on being a car company and not like a future robotics company or whatever, which would probably like decimate their value, I think, the stock price. But there is a path there for someone to come in and like really work overtime to rehab the brand. It reminds a bit of what Dara did at Uber after the Travis Kalanick-ish era, because like that company had become so toxic under the old leadership, and like maybe not as horribly toxic as we've seen with Tesla now, but like they did have a CEO came in and like was able to rehab that brand to where people aren't boycotting Ubers like they were once.
And I think what's important here is like nobody cares about Tesla. The people protesting Tesla, it's not because it's Tesla, it's electric cars, or of what the products are. It's only about who the CEO is.
It's Elon S. Trump.
100%.
Yeah.
So
exactly right.
If that kind of, you know, haze over the company leaves, if Elon Musk was to move on and they had some regular Joe Schmo auto CEO, I don't think that's kind of the whole point. That would mean that the protest won and people wouldn't hate Tesla anymore, I think.
Yeah, it's like this, somebody comes in, some guy or gal, it's like, I'm gonna get this company back on track and you're never gonna know what I think about gender affirming care for minors.
Yeah, people would be like, hooray.
Okay, great, cool. Like,
So totally agreed there. I think the other things that it's important to note is like Tesla, even before this, was dealing with a bunch of other problems. Like, basically their products have been getting a little old. The one new car that they have unveiled within the last like 5 years is the Tesla Cybertruck, which is really big and really controversially designed.
It really symbolizes that current moment with Musk and Trump and everything.
For sure.
Like, it's a rolling symbol of that political vibe.
But even beyond that, it's just not a car that a lot of people seem to want to buy. It's a big Hummer-like, you know, it just doesn't have a huge appeal. They did that instead of developing a lower cost car, which is something that they say we're going to see this year. But like, you know, basically the point is, besides the whole Elon Musk situation, this company already went into like last year with kind of regular automaker problems of like, how do we get more people to buy our cars? How do we make products people love? And now,
how do we compete in China?
How do we compete in China?
Yeah.
And now they have this whole, you know, firestorm on top of it. Yeah. So
unforced error kind of deal. We had a fun stat on BYD too, right? Like Tim said earlier, Tesla sold 337,000 EVs globally. That was in Q1, 3 months. How'd BYD do, Tim?
Yeah, BYD, if you count both plug-in hybrids and pure electric vehicles, that's all the cars they sell.
Right.
BYD sold just over 371,000 plug-in cars in March alone. So BYD, China's leading EV company, and now the world's leading EV company, sold more electric cars in a month than Tesla did all quarter.
Basically 3x the volume.
Yeah.
More or less.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And basically like early last year, BYD's rise has been extremely quick. If you go back to this time last year, BYD was behind Tesla slightly in monthly sales and quarterly sales. Then they kind of went neck and neck. And then now they've just completely pulled ahead. And it seems like there's no looking back. BYD is going to be the world's best-selling and biggest maker of electric cars as far as we can see.
You can't tell me that this brand won't come to the United States at some point. I'm sorry, I refuse to believe that. Like, they China did export some cars to Canada, for example. Like if you live in Canada, you can buy a Shanghai made Tesla, to give you one example. It's like they were keeping out Chinese EVs to kind of do us a favor, like under Biden. Like they're like, we're gonna do our neighbor to the south and our good trading partner a solid and keep China's cars out of here. I don't think Canada is super in the mood to do us favors right now or for a while. So like, what's stopping them from just like, hey, BYD, come on over, like build a factory, like let's supercharge, you know, electrification in Canada. Like that could happen. So like, I know that we have this enmity with China and we have these concerns over data privacy and security and everything else. Like, I think there's a way through for something that's this powerful and this big at some point.
It is possible. So I think we should move on. We should talk about hybrids. One thing that we didn't actually mention during this was that Toyota, which is not a big maker of pure electric cars yet, but they do really well with hybrids. In the first quarter of this year, their electrified sales totaled 289,000.
That's awesome. That's great.
39.6% every year. Like hybrids, Toyota's hybrids are absolutely crushing it.
They're crushing it. Yeah, and like to give you an example, like the model that they're moving to at Toyota is like, if it has a gas engine, it's probably going to be a hybrid.
Yeah.
And like the new Toyota Camry, which is one of the few sedans left that people still buy, it's all hybrid now. I think there is a very strong chance that like the next generation RAV4 will be hybrid only, which will put hybrid sales through the roof for them. It's like they're going to do that for everything. I say it's great. Like that's less CO2, it's less gas used, like Mazel Tov, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so speaking of hybrids, Patrick, what's our next story?
Oh, you can't buy any Toyota hybrids. That's the next story. They're making all these hybrids, but you can't buy any because, you know, they can't keep them in stock and they have supply issues. Womp womp. A new report from Reuters indicates that demand for Toyota's hybrids is absolutely haywire right now. We're seeing long wait times for just about anyone looking to buy a plug-in or traditional hybrid. And there's long lines at the parts counters who are struggling to keep parts going for these vehicles too.
Yeah, in Toyota's home turf of Japan, there is a wait time of up to 5 months for hybrids, while Europeans have to wait more than 2 months.
Yeah.
And the same thing is happening in the U.S., where people are going to dealer lots and they're not finding any hybrids.
And that's a little bit easier in like Japan and Europe. There are countries in the world where they're more used to ordering cars and waiting a few months. Like that's pretty much the norm in Europe. Whereas America, like when you want a new car, you want it now. Like we like instant gratification in this country, baby. So like wait times for us are like not great, especially for a thing that's like not like, like a Tesla Cybertruck. It's like a hybrid Toyota. Like, that's wild. Yeah, there's a wait for Priuses now. Problem is parts. The demand increase has caused shortages of key components necessary for hybrids. There's like a shortage of high-grade magnets, for example, for hybrid drivetrains. They don't have enough of those. So there's also a bottleneck in rotors and stators used for electric motors. And all of Toyota's different suppliers that they either work with our own, because like Toyota's more vertically integrated than people think. They're kind of struggling to get these parts out, you know. Mm-hmm. And also, since we're talking about tariffs and imports, this whole thing, majority of these components are assembled in Japan and then sent to other factories around the world. So things can get complicated there too soon.
Yeah. I mean, Patrick, we're inside EVs.
Yeah.
I think we're also a friend to the hybrid car. Like, what's your thoughts on hybrid?
I think of the site as inside electrified vehicles. I really do. Like, I just objectively, if you're talking about reducing CO2 and gas use, like going fully electric is the way to go. But I tend to think also, like, if you're going to get a gas car nowadays, you should get a hybrid. Like, I think it's a solid compromise. There is a place for that technology as this stuff builds out. People don't like paying for gas. Like, who the hell likes paying for gas? And I've known guys who are like rich dudes who own collections of Porsches and they complain about gas prices. Like, it's like, first of all, what do you expect? And second, it's like no one likes this. So give people a reason to break up with gasoline and they'll do it. But I think what's interesting with this current moment is that like it shows that with hybrids, you run into the same kind of problems that EVs have. Mm-hmm. It's like, how do you ramp up the supply chain for this new technology, the parts for this new technology? Where are the batteries supposed to come from? And it's like, the fact that they're running out of like electric motor parts, like that can be an EV problem easily, and yet it's the same problem with hybrids too. So these things are kind of in lockstep more than people think.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
One thing that's interesting, I think that, you know, Toyota's really smart about manufacturing and figuring out a supply chain. It's like, it's kind of maybe better as a manufacturing company than as a car company in some ways. I don't mean that as an insult, but that's just like where it's like secret sauce is. And they like building things where they're located. So one of the big steps that they're taking is they have a new battery plant in North Carolina that's opening soon. And it's going to be supplying batteries for hybrids to all of its U.S.-made cars. And they're going to build EV batteries there eventually, too. So, you know, they're going to be doing what the president wants, too. And like building stuff locally, sourcing parts locally. But these things, as always, they don't happen overnight.
Yeah.
All right, now that we're at the end, it's time for Plus Minus, our segment where we talk about who's up and who's down in the EV world. Tim, who you got this week?
I have a plus, and it is this new survey that came out from a couple of polling groups and the Zero Emission Transportation Association, which represents EV manufacturers and other people in that industry. They basically found that 80% of respondents who identified as Republicans, including 4 in 5 people who associate themselves with MAGA, said the U.S. should continue supporting American companies and American workers who build affordable EVs.
Yeah.
So like basically there were a lot of different findings in this study, but the gist of it was that they surveyed Republicans and found that overwhelmingly Republicans support the types of policies that, you know, incentivize more EV manufacturing in America, more battery manufacturing in America. And like at a time when we're staring down the barrel of the EV tax credit, you know, battery manufacturing credits, all the EV charging funding, all this stuff being stripped away by Trump and a Republican majority in Congress. Like it turns out, according to this one study, that even though Republicans don't necessarily want to buy EVs, they actually do have an interest in EV manufacturing. They think that's a good thing for America. So I don't know. Hopefully this, like, I know that there are, you know, lobbyists on Capitol Hill right now from all these companies, probably from Zeta too, trying to convince Republican Congress people to not gut all these programs. And like, maybe you show them this and you say, hey, like your constituents care about EVs. Your constituents want these investments. This is the best shot that this industry has to you know, keeping all this stuff from getting chopped.
It is. It doesn't have to be partisan. It's what we always say about this stuff. It's just technology. It's just a type of propulsion. It does not need to be as politicized as it does. And like this leads into my plus for the week, which is I go back to Hyundai and the Meta plant in Georgia that I was at last week. And it just feels like right place, right time for that car company. Like it did everything right. It built this huge factory here to make EVs and hybrids. It's going to employ thousands of Americans. I talked to Representative Buddy Carter, who's Georgia's congressman, Republican, obviously. And he was like, yeah, I didn't like the so-called EV mandate that Biden did, which is not quite a mandate, but that people believe it is. But he was like, but yeah, like this is a great plan. These are great cars. These are jobs here. And he supports, not just gutting the IRA completely and gutting tax credits completely. He's like, yeah, we got to figure this out, take a scalpel to it because it's supporting what we're doing here. And I was like, I think that's very reasonable, you know, and I wish that that was the approach taken across the board. Like it's there are ways, it seems, to do jobs in America and to like supercharge this industry and create a cleaner industry without just completely like nuking the economy or nuking all this progress that's happened so far. So see what happens on all of that soon.
Yeah, let's hope so.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to the Plugged In podcast from Inside EVs. We'll be back next Friday. Today's show was produced by Michael Perkins and brought to you by the Motorsport Network.
Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, leave us a review, and tell a friend to tune in. It'll really help us out. And if you liked what you heard, you can find all our EV coverage on InsideEVs.com. See you next time.
Happy Liberation Day, folks. Yeah.